And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Text lines stay open. The number is 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. That number is always on our website, too, by the way, at rightsidemedia.org. You can always check it out. Hey, by the way, I gotta point out that the latest edition of the Right Click podcast, which is one of our, you know, our many pieces of content that Right Side Media here puts together. Right Click came out on Friday. Birdman had his latest piece. In fact, I texted him this morning. And I said, you were kind of on fire on Friday. He got real animated. And I'm loving this. So bottom line is this, especially if you have somebody, you know, younger or somebody who's a gamer or into tech stuff or, you know, bottom line is this, Right Click is a podcast that is conservative, that is just as much into the idea of conservative principles as the rest of the Right Side stuff, but it's done through the medium of a guy who's a lot younger than me, who knows a lot more tech than me, and who's also been a competitive gamer. And so he comes at it, he can tell you all this stuff, but also through that genre, and it really hits a good audience. So check it out. Right Click is up. And then, of course, the latest edition of Right Philosophy, which is the video podcast that I do every week, it came out last Wednesday, and another edition is already in the can and be ready for publication once production is finished this coming Wednesday. So check them out. Rightsidemedia.org is the website. All our stuff is on there, to include the latest piece that I just wrote that gets published weekly. It's out today. 1819 News always gets the first run at it, and then it goes to about 18 or more other news outlets around the region. But it's also available, so check that out. All right. Pull up a chair, my friends. Let's talk about some things. Like, you hear stuff like, well, what is the doctrinal policy by which you handle your foreign affairs? Well, okay, what does this mean? Typically what happens is the manner and means by which a president and his or her administration is going to pursue foreign policy, it becomes their doctrine. It becomes like a theme, if you will. Like you can almost put a title on it. It's sort of like the principle by which they will approach foreign policy. With the Harris, you know, Biden-Harris administration, you really can't see it. Now, I would say if I had to put a designator on it, that maybe the Biden-Harris, you know, doctrine was whatever Trump didn't do. That's it. Repeal Trump. That's been the majority of their foreign policy has been repeal Trump. So we might call it the Biden-Harris repeal Trump doctrine. That's what it appears anyway. But listen, throughout our nation's history, there have been, starting with the Monroe Doctrine, there have been a number of doctrinal positions taken by presidents that have guided foreign policy. And then at some point, some of them actually become so overarching that they wind up guiding more than foreign policy. They guide everything to do with the administration's efforts. They also then wind up affecting geopolitical politics and climates. Sounds very lofty. It's not. What it really is basically the core principles upon which that particular president rests his, you know, daily thinking gets formed into a actual position statement, and it becomes the manner in which they'll conduct business. And it becomes predictable at that point. And our adversaries and our allies can look at it and go, okay, with this president, we can expect yada, yada, yada. Well, do we have that right now? I don't know that we do. I really don't think that we do. I mean, I can look at the way that Biden has botched the things with like Afghanistan or Iran, and I'm trying to find anything about that that supports America's positions. Neither one of them see. Well, we ended the war. Did you? Because it looks like we may have to go back one day, to be honest. Well, what about the way they've handled foreign policy related to trade? Well, we're in a trade deficit now with China. And oh, by the way, we're now energy dependent. So what was the position on this? All of those, if you get down to it, were unraveling Trump's positions. It's as if the entire Biden-Harris doctrine was called Never Trump. That's it. I'm sure I'm oversimplifying. I feel certain that a Democrat who has any base knowledge in things like foreign policy or who worked in the administration may have a differing opinion. You're welcome to try it. Tell me what they are. I'll be glad to go ahead and pick it apart too. But let's talk about a few over time. I mean, so let's walk through history. The Monroe Doctrine. All right, so in 1823, Phil, 1823. Well, listen, this one lasted for over 100 years. So President James Monroe, in 1823, coined what has become known as the Monroe Doctrine. It was one of the first times that we'd ever seen a presidential doctrinal position that was a stated foreign policy position. In this case, it opposed European colonialism in our hemisphere. So basically what he was doing was saying, we're not with you guys anymore. We'll work with you, but do not come into our backyard and try to colonize any more of the nations in our hemisphere. That's what it was. It holds that any intervention in the political affairs of the Americas by foreign powers is considered a potentially hostile act against the United States. So Spain, how about you stop trying to colonize South America? So Great Britain and France, how about you quit trying to come into the Caribbean? How about you just stop? Every one of you just stop where you are. No more colonization. And oh, by the way, don't touch Florida. I mean, that's the Monroe Doctrine was really like saying, we are now the biggest dog in this hemisphere. It's our backyard. Stop playing in it. So all the Spanish colonies in the Americas, they had pretty much achieved their independence by then. And so literally President Monroe, he just basically said, hey, there's a new world and there's an old world. We're the new world now. Back off. That's the Monroe Doctrine. And the world got it. You know what I'm saying? The world got it. Were there still forays and were there still potential, you know, players in our hemisphere? Sure. But the Monroe Doctrine, it stayed in effect. In fact, I think it was even rekindled. It was. Well into the 21st century, it continues to be talked about. I mean, when you look at things like the Bay of Pigs or the Cuban Missile Crisis, Monroe Doctrine, that was under Kennedy. When you look at things like, issues related to the Soviets intervening in places like Nicaragua, well, that was in Reagan. Yeah, but you know what? The Monroe Doctrine helped shape the Reagan Doctrine. So this is what happens when you have a well-stated foreign policy position, a doctrinal statement. It tends to guide things. All right, let's talk about modern era. Let me pick one here in my stack. How about Truman? Truman, yep, 1947, the Truman Doctrine. Basically, the Truman Doctrine was that America would support democracies against authoritarian threats. It was post-World War II. We had just seen what the Nazis and an imperialistic Japan had tried to do to the world, or for that matter, the fascists in Italy. And we were watching the rise of the Soviet Union. Huh. So the Truman Doctrine came out, and it pledged America's support for democracies against any authoritarian threats. I mean, the primary goal was really to start trying to stem the tide of the Soviets. It was the beginnings of the Cold War. In fact, the interesting thing is, historians now say that in March of 1947, when Truman declared the Truman Doctrine, that was the beginning of the Cold War. That shaped our policy for the next 50 years. The Truman Doctrine, you could see it, you knew what it was. You look at it and go, okay, I see it. And Russia knew the Truman Doctrine was legit. Truman actually told Congress during that time, he says, it must be the policy of the United States to support free peoples who are resisting attempted subjugation by armed minorities or outside pressures. All of our foreign policy shifted to anti-Soviet Union. It guided everything that we did for years. Some might say that we neglected other parts of the world because of it. Some would say we had to do it because the Russian bear was so big and growing so much larger by the day. But when you have a policy, folks, when you have the means of doing something with a well-stated intent, it actually drives the train. I ask you right now, what do you think the Biden-Harris doctrine has been for the last 4 years? Do we know? Can you see it? Is it even there? Did they ever take the time to formulate it? Because this is the kind of thing that, truthfully, when a president is going into office, they're already establishing it. I've often wondered what would be the Williams doctrine if I was president. Ah, here we go. I mean, I look at it and think, I mean, I there's a hybrid. There's a few pieces that I enjoy from other doctrines. I mean, I could sum it up with a phrase and say my doctrine would be win friends, kill enemies. How about that? I've got that on a sign on the wall behind me, as a matter of fact, right here in the studio. Win friends, kill enemies. Is that a doctrine? Maybe. I think it puts people on notice, and that's part of what a doctrine does. A doctrinal statement actually puts people on notice of where you are and how you make your decisions and where your interests are going to lie, so that when they're doing things, they're thinking about your doctrine. But when you're unpredictable, when they have no clue what your doctrinal positions are, then at that point, it's a vacuum, and the enemy starts to fill the vacuum. Don't tell me Iran hadn't filled a vacuum. Don't tell me that the Houthis and Hezbollah and Hamas haven't filled a vacuum. Don't tell me that China hadn't tried to fill a vacuum in the Pacific. I'm just telling you, in the absence of a clear stated doctrinal position, the enemy will step in and fill the vacuum. Let's take a break, Big Rig. We'll do that right now. I'll come right back, and we're going to keep it moving forward. The Reagan Doctrine, the Bush Doctrine, what are they? And then, yeah, I got a little bit here on the Trump Doctrine. And then the question becomes, is there a Kamala Harris Doctrine? Spoiler alert, not really. Phil Williams, we'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. Hey, Stan from Huntsville just texted in. He says he's earning his ruffian credentials right now. He says the Kamala Doctrine can probably be found in the children's sections of too many public libraries. And once the general public sees what it says, they will demand its removal. Moms for Liberty will be all over it. Stan, just so you know, Big Rig's laughing over on the side right now. What else we got here? I'll get a few more text messages before I go forward. Jim from Grove Oaks says, hey, Colonel, go to your favorite search engine and type in Kamala collards and bathtub. I don't want to. I don't want to do that. I'm concerned. I don't want to do it. Anyway, thank you, Jim from Grove Oak. Bruce from Springville said, the Harris policy consists of managing our weapons the way the French do. Never been fired and dropped once. Vive la France! John from Harvest says, I think I may have mentioned this before, but when it comes to presidential policy, personnel equals policy. The president is the executive branch, but obviously one person can't run the entire executive branch. What he can do is hire and fire the people who will execute the executive policy. So if there are stupid things going on, see Afghan border, etc., and no one's getting fired, folks can reasonably assume it's because the president approves of what the personnel are doing. This is actually more important than what a president says in a speech. That's a valid point, John. And I think, you know, in on the one hand, I want a president who will say the buck stops here and not throw his people under the bus. And I also want a president who, on issues of major policy or major points of, you know, of interest to the U.S., you know, the running of the U.S. Interests, either whether abroad or here, I want to know that president is engaged, because they do get a daily brief. I mean, I have someone very close to me who used to be a part of the daily briefs for the president, and said it was like notorious that Clinton never took his brief. He was always too busy. It was a thing. And the briefer sat outside the door of the Oval Office for hours until it was made known that the president will not be seeing you today. And so the president receives intel updates, foreign policy briefings, daily news cycle. He gets all of it. He gets it fed to, he has people that aggregate all this for him and bring it to him. And if he chooses to ignore it, that's one thing. If he forgets that it was said, that's another. But if he throws his people under the bus, now granted, you're right. You hire the right people, you get the right job done. But it's still the president at the end who's at the top. And if it goes south, like Afghanistan, if it goes south, I want to see a commander-in-chief who says, that was on my watch. I'll take the hit on that. Not in this administration. Jeff from Indiana says, Phil, I'm surprised. He said, where'd it go? He said, I'm surprised you don't know what the Biden-Harris doctrine is. It's the doctrine of projection. If a Democrat does it, tell everyone else we're not doing that, and it's the other guy, which relies on the other doctrine, make America stupid, because stupid people don't know what's going on and will believe anything. Point taken. And then JT Lacey Springs, what are you sending me, man? I'm not going to read that on the air, JT. I'll come back to it and see what all that says. But yeah, okay, I'll come back to that. All right, Wendy from Moulton, by the way. Okay, listen, why are y'all, I don't want to know about collards in a bathtub. I don't. You're bothering me with this collards in the, anyway, y'all want to text me something? It's 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. I reserve the right to read or not read them on the air. In a minute, I'm gonna dive into what is the, or potentially what is the Harris Doctrine. And I've got a title for it. I'm going to give it to you. And by the way, tomorrow night's the big event, right? Whoop, whoop. We're going to see whether or not Kamala can get on stage with the Donald. How's she going to hold up? Keep in mind, this is a woman who has not actually participated in that level of debate for years. Like, for years. She has avoided hard interviews. She has she is known for word salading things when she gets nervous. She laughs, kind of cackles. She has characteristics that really seem to indicate a deep discomfort with the doings of her job. And Donald Trump, who may have the same, covers it with a poker face. And the question is going to be tomorrow night, which Donald shows up. I think that's, in my opinion, it's going to be as much about whether or not Kamala can handle herself as whether or not Donald Trump is going to be, you know, blowing it by getting too rowdy. But that's tomorrow night, and she deserves to get some questions about foreign policy. And if she had to label what is the Harris Doctrine, I'd love to hear a question, Madam Vice President. What exactly is the Harris Doctrine? And I question whether she can answer it. I don't think she can. Because I think the vast majority of Americans are pretty good with a combination of the Monroe Doctrine, the Bush Doctrine, the Reagan Doctrine, and even the Trump Doctrine. Something that puts America's interests first. Something that says, us first, then you. Right now, it appears that the Biden-Harris Doctrine has been, among other things, ambiguous, and has also been, oh, by the way, about all of you, we're second. And that is, we're looking at 4 more years of that. And she deserves to be asked about it tomorrow night at the debate. So when we come back from this break, I'm gonna jump on in, and my gosh, y'all are still texting me about collard greens. What in God's name, collard greens? Big Rig doesn't know. All right, I will look at this during the break so I can come back knowledgeable of the question of collards. This is bothering me. I feel like there's something nefarious going on right now. Do you have that sense? Is this me? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I don't have a clue.
Like I'm afraid to dive into it without knowing what I'm talking about right now.
Yeah.
All right. We're taking a break. We'll come right back. Hour number two. And don't forget, at the bottom of the hour, we're going to switch gears and do a little JP on sports. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on a Meatloaf Monday. We're in this section about the Harris Doctrine, but I gotta tell you, the whole thing about collard greens has really thrown me for a loop. I'll be honest, when people start texting me, and first of all, I have to watch what I say on the air, so I wasn't sure if somebody was saying something that was like, this is meant as a double entendre, like collard greens meant something that I didn't know it meant. And the last thing I want to do is go down that road. But even the lovely Charlene right now is texting me because she's a prolific texter during the show. She says, look up the collards in the bathtub. Harris said it, and it's so funny. That's my wife saying that. So I'm thinking, okay, it's now safe. It has received the Charlene stamp of approval. But she also said, you may have a hard time finding all the people that skewered her about washing collards in a bathtub. So, okay. I'll tell you what. Big Rig went out during the break and found the audio clip. Maybe later in the show, we will we'll dive into some collard greens, see where we go. Just saying. Several other text messages. Nani from Beverly Hills says Trump needs to be the first to say, I'm talking. tomorrow night. That would, you know what? That would be hilarious. That's what she did to Mike Pence during the vice presidential debate. Excuse me, Mr. Vice President, I'm talking right now. But she has this way of talking like she's kind of like the mean preschool teacher. Little boys and girls, everybody sit down. I'm talking. It's irritating. All right, we'll see where it goes. But I'm hearing that she's also kind of she's rather nonplussed about the fact that when it's not your turn to talk, the mics will be turned off because she wants to be able to correct her. So we'll see. Becky from Huntsville says Trump doctrine is top down, take down. He finds the highest ranking official leader who's causing the problem, takes him down, saves time and precious military lives. Becky, that's pretty solid. As in Qasem Soleimani, I guess. Thomas Mathen says, avoid jumping into a bathtub of collard greens. Or turnip greens, or poke salad greens, LOL. Ron from Tuscumbia says, the collard greens video is funny, but the woman's response on TikTok makes it hilarious. Okay, I got to check that out. John from Harvest says, I like the way Reagan described his policy during the Cold War. He said, my strategy is we win, they lose. I'm for that. Dorothy from Elkmont says, Kamala needs 2 weeks to hole up and prep. Have you heard she's doing mock debates with a Trump impersonator, even dressed like him? I wonder, that's a little much. Can you imagine they actually dress the person up? I mean, I guess there's a lot to be said for, I mean, now, Dorothy, I will say, you know, as an Army officer, and like, you know, as an infantry officer for that matter, especially when you're prepping for, you know, actions on the objectives. We used to always say before a mission, like if you've got any time at all to prep for a mission, the old rule was at a minimum, practice the actions on the objective. Meaning you may not practice the whole movement there. You may not practice, you know, all the things about the prep to get there. But at the very least, practice what you're going to do when you get to the objective, to the mission site. So I guess it's hard to fault her for practicing her actions on the objective. We'll see how it goes. All right, let me jump on in and finish this up. The Bush Doctrine. What was the Bush Doctrine? You want that one first or the Reagan Doctrine? Let's go in chronological order. We went from Monroe to Truman. Let's talk about Reagan. I almost feel like we need to have a moment of silence. Ronald Reagan. The Reagan Doctrine, it says, was a United States strategy implemented by the Reagan administration to overwhelm the global influence of the Soviet Union. Okay, so he cottoned to some of the same things you saw in Truman. Truman's doctrine was to combat the effort or the spread of authoritarian regimes. Everybody knew what he meant was the beginning of the Cold War against the Soviet Union. But we had also just fought the Nazis. That was still fresh. The Japanese, the Italians. Reagan doctrine went one step further. It allowed some measure of preemptive, overt, or covert activity. For instance, don't forget like the Iran-Contra thing, the one that made Oliver North famous. Under the Reagan Doctrine, the bottom line is we would provide overt or covert aid to, you know, like groups like anti-communist guerrillas, resistance movements in order to help roll back. Like we got kind of in the mix without sending a whole bunch of U.S. troops down there. Special operations, CIA, other efforts would help fund and foment the opportunity for rebellion against these authoritarian or Soviet influences in places like Africa and Asia and Latin America. It basically was designed to diminish Soviet influence, bottom line. That was the Reagan Doctrine. Stop the Soviets where they are. Don't let them get here. Okay, I get it. We didn't have a lot of, you know, force on force. It's more along the lines of how to help people where the influence is so that the influence doesn't get to us. Then there was the Bush Doctrine. And the Bush Doctrine, it was indeed a global shift. The Bush Doctrine, I'm talking about George W., the Bush Doctrine literally for the first time talked about preemptive force-on-force strikes. I mean, this was a sea change. We had always been the country that we didn't strike first, but we would not hesitate to strike next and strike bigger. That's okay. The Bush Doctrine changed that. 9/11 happened, and then all of a sudden, the Bush Doctrine became very pronounced. It was the right to secure ourselves against countries that harbor or give aid to terrorist groups, and it was the right to unilaterally take some kind of preemptive action, even regime change if necessary, to put the world back into a position that was better for America. Some would say that was an excuse to go and depose Saddam Hussein. Friggin' right it was. That's exactly what it was. So, and listen, I understand. I was there. I went to Baghdad in the beginning of the war. I was there for a year. I get it. The Iraq war, there's a bit of a stain on people's... I totally get it. But I will say this. Saddam Hussein was also destabilizing an entire region. We'd already been to war with him once, and he was also paying people to commit acts of terror to destabilize further. There were suicide bombers who would get a stipend from the Saddam Hussein regime. Their families would, because they had committed acts of terror. I mean, this was a guy who was, he was a bad actor in many ways, and he was suppressing an entire nation. So that being said, the world does not mind that he's gone. But the Bush Doctrine is what got him gone. The Bush Doctrine literally said for the first time, we will take unilateral action and we will do what is necessary, even to the extent of regime change. And there's a lot of people that talk about that's a neocon. It's a war hawk type thing. It allowed the military industrial complex to have its way. And maybe some of that's true. In fact, I would say, yeah, that some of that is true. But other people looked at it as the world was on notice that if you do bad things over there, we will come there. It was a different day. Then we had Barack Obama, and the great apology tour began. So what did Donald Trump bring to bear? The last one before I get into Harris is this one, Donald Trump. What is the Trump Doctrine? The Trump Doctrine is literally known as America First. What does that mean? Well, it depends on who you're reading. But what it basically means is some call it a nationalist foreign policy. What does that mean? It means us first. So we looked at things during the Trump era. The Trump Doctrine was literally about, you know, okay, here's the bottom line. If you're hosing things over there and it hurts us, we're gonna stop you. If you're hosing things over there and it has nothing to do with us, we're not going there. If you're doing things that impact us on a trade basis or on a national security basis or whatever, we're going to fix you. It was unilateral, but it was also isolationist to a degree because we were not going out to preemptively start new wars, but we were not going to let new wars start on our watch because we would take certain action that preserved America's interest rather than kowtow. Watch Biden with Iran. Was Iran kind of kept at bay during the Trump years? By God, they were. Was Iran set free when Biden got? Yes, they were. It's amazing. So Trump took office and he relied on a lot of military personnel. He relied on White House advisors even more than the State Department. He was less about foreign policy at first and more about strength. But as time went on, he also developed this whole foreign policy America First agenda that led to senior advisors like his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, going over and helping with the Abraham Accords. He was not afraid to put up a unilateral drone strike to take out somebody like Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi or Qasem Soleimani. He was not afraid to go ahead and say, in Syria, ISIS will not be allowed to continue because they are defeating America's interests in that region. And so he quashed ISIS. Did we go into a major, major force-on-force conflict? No. Did we have troops in harm's way? Yes. Did we take out bad actors? Yes, surgically. Did we operate in what was considered to be America's interests before anybody else's? Yes. And so the idea of a Trump Doctrine was America First. All right, we're going to come right back, and we're going to talk about... Just for a few minutes, we're going to close this out. As we head toward tomorrow's debate, ask yourself, what is Harris's doctrine? What is it? I'm going to give you one word. You ready? Ambiguity. I'll tell you all about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.
We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just pulling pins on truth grenades is what we're doing up in here. So what is the Kamala Harris doctrine? I hold in my hot little hands a piece from RealClearDefense.com. Came out 2 days ago. What is the Kamala Harris doctrine? They don't label it this way, but I'm going to tell you right now, as I read through this tome that they wrote, this multi-page tome, that's what I do. I go out there and I find the resources, check them all out and summarize them for you so you don't have to. The bottom line is this. I'm going to go ahead and declare that the Kamala Harris doctrine is a doctrine of ambiguity. What? Which is like saying, I want my cake and I want to eat it too. What are my examples? Like, okay, so it points out here, and the reason why I say that is like, for instance, in her acceptance speech at the DNC recently, she mentioned foreign policy, she mentioned national security, but she did things like, she supports Israel, but she also supports Palestine's self-determination. Okay. She worked towards a ceasefire, the ongoing conflict in Gaza, but she supports the Palestinians. Support for Ukraine and its war against Russia without a plan. Support for border security, but also welcoming new immigrants. Okay. Ensuring America has the strongest, most lethal fighting force in the world. And yet we are at epic levels of the ability to... you got to call. Tell the caller I probably won't be able to get to him this time because I'm going to be finishing this up and it won't work. I got a caller right after that. I'm back. The bottom line is this. She will. No one's putting flesh on the bones here. We don't know what the policy is. She will say she's for this thing, but you need to understand she also supports that. And here's the bottom line: that is not a doctrine. Ambiguity is not a plan. Ambiguity does not give our world any sense of stability. When they know where the big dog stands, they guard themselves against the idea of doing something to provoke the big dog. When the big dog is for whatever happens today, when we'll do something more tomorrow, then I don't know where do you think you want us to? When the wind blows and they change direction, no one knows what to do. Like, for instance, the Afghanistan withdrawal, what was her position? Well, she was the last one in the room with Biden. She says so. I mean, what does she recommend to try and deter Russians' invasion of Ukraine? We don't have any idea. But what is her position on their adherence to strategic ambiguity regarding China-Taiwan? We don't know, but China bad, we think. Sort of. Is it? I don't know. Because I can look at all of her other positions over time. That's the thing. Hey, Kamala, you've got a record. I can look at this and I can go, wow, you appear to have like some kind of neoconservative globalist agenda going on, don't you? Except that you're not about really doing anything. For instance, border security. As a U.S. senator, now she talked, by the way, she talked about, we're going to secure our southern border. But yet as a U.S. senator, she voted for what was called the Access to Counsel Act that basically ensured that anybody who came across the border got access to legal assistance. Oh, that's great. Let's jam things up. I'm a lawyer. I can say that. She had previously sent a letter to Homeland Security in which she demanded that Customs and Border Patrol officials grant persons detained at ports of entry timely and unfettered access to legal counsel. She also signed a letter to President Trump expressing her outrage at his order to prevent foreign terrorists from entering the U.S. Why? Why? Why would you put your name on that? Trump's order suspended for 90 days the issuance of visas to nationals of Iran, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, all the others. She labeled it a Muslim ban. It was just a Muslim ban. It's mean. It's mean to Muslims. No, it's called America's Interest First. She voted against the idea of confirming John Kelly as the DHS secretary because he didn't provide assurances that he would allow dreamers across the border and amnesty. She rescinded President Trump's executive order directing Homeland Security to prioritize deportation of illegal aliens. Condemned the Trump administration for even talking about it. I could go on and on and on. She wanted a pathway to citizenship, but she's going to secure the border. But she's going to keep giving them stuff, but she wants to secure the border. She's going to provide like sanctuary status and make sure they have legal counsel, but she wants to secure the border. It's ambiguity. How about this? Climate change is an existential threat. Well, there went our energy policy. Thank you very much. On the world stage, we're now going to buy your oil because we can't drill it here. We'll buy it from you, but we can't drill it here. She presided over things like, you know, buying Venezuelan oil to refill our strategic oil reserves that we drained because we didn't want to drill our own. Yeah. How about this? She voted against the Strengthening America's Security Act in the Middle East. Why? Well, because, you know, it would have provided partnership and military assistance to Israel. We can't have that. That's inflammatory. That'll make Iran mad. Okay. She also criticized the Trump administration for taking out Qasem Soleimani, arguing that it inflamed tensions. Okay. How about this? She has a 100% rating from a group called CAIR, C-A-I-R, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, a group which, by the way, was celebrating when Palestinians terrorized Israel on October 7th of last year. How about China? How about criticizing Trump's so-called failed China policy or recommending the return to engagement with China? Listen, here's the thing. She will say one thing, do another, and then do both, and then sometimes do nothing because her Harris doctrine is ambiguity. And that is not leadership. That's a woman who has no idea what to do. She just wants the job so bad she'll do or say whatever it takes to get there. To include collard greens in a bathtub, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.